The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at TNTRadio.live. For the news and views you can't hear anywhere else, it's the Steve Hook Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Steve Hook Show. I am Steve Hook on TNT Radio. It's so good to be with you once again. Happy St. Patrick's Day to all of the, everybody's Irish today, right, on St. Paddy's Day. But certainly hoping you're having a good one. I'm in for the Guinness and the corned beef and cabbage shortly after the show. So far, though, I decided I was going to stay sober for the program. So that'll come afterwards. We got a big show for you today. We've got a guest. Murray Sabrin is our guest, and he's a good one to have today. He's a emeritus professor of finance at Ramapo College in the state of New Jersey. That's the that's my wife's alma mater. So he's a professor there. He's also the author of a couple of books, and we'll get into him when he gets here. But it's just a really opportune day to have him, given that the markets are just once again crapping the bed. I mean, just really down. This whole bank, SVB, and then Signature Bank and Credit Suisse, and it's starting to really, these ripples are becoming kind of rather large waves now. And let's hope that it kind of stops. Everybody needs the markets to close for the weekend. That's probably a good thing. Let everybody just calm the hell down. But I'm just looking here at Fox News, Fox Business, rather. And there's an article, banking system is on the verge of another Bear Stearns moment. Holy cow, let's hope not. But we're going to talk to Murray Sabrin about it. I'm sure he'll, I know that he's going to have quite a lot to say about that. And I look forward to getting his opinion on it. You know what I stopped doing it on times like this when the market's going nuts? I just stop looking at all my investments. I don't look at my 401k. I don't look at my stocks and my all of that stuff. I just say, you know what? Because you'll give yourself a heart attack. You're trying to follow up what's going on. I mean, there's not a damn thing I can do about it, but maybe, there's nothing I can do to stop my money from disappearing. But maybe cooler heads will prevail. And the banks will get their act together. We shall see. I certainly do hope it's not another Bear Stearns or Lehman Brothers type situation that we find ourselves in. There you go. So Murray will talk to us about that. And of course, other stuff is going on. In fact, we've got a great story with my man Ruckus today. So what we're going to do, you know what, we'll talk to him in just a sec. Let me tell you about this though. If you have a suggestion for a possible guest that you'd like to hear on TNT Radio, or perhaps you have a topic that you think you'd want us to discuss, well, we'd love to hear from you. Simply complete the suggestion form at TNT Radio's website, and maybe we'll take you up on that and help out, and you can spend some more time with TNT Radio. We'll be back with Ruckus right after this.
It's the stuff.
It's that division
people are talking about.
And that cluelessness that they want to push.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right. Now, this is wonderful. I love this story. President Biden's son, Hunter, the smartest man that Joe knows, may have shot himself in the foot. Metaphorically speaking, that is, because today, Hunter Biden escalated a legal war with the former computer repair shop owner who came into possession of his now infamous laptop. He's now suing a countersuit claiming that his privacy was invaded, which of course threatens to put out all this sordid, well, the drug binging, the sexcapades and all that, but that's just kind of the tip of the iceberg. What they're really scared about on here is the business deals. Very, very shady. Here with the whole story, Ruckus, TNT Radio News producer Adam Clark. Hey, Adam, what's happening, brother? This is kind of a funny story, huh?
Well, I don't know. I guess it is clown world after all. So all the news, I guess we have to call funny. Either you'll laugh till you cry or you'll just cry. yes, what's going on here? So Hunter Biden, By the way, nice. We have to place that disclaimer about metaphorically speaking about him shooting himself in the foot, because yeah. knowing him, he could quite literally do that, from what I understand. So Hunter Biden himself has filed a countersuit against John Paul MacIsaac. That's the computer repair shop owner who managed to find himself in possession of the laptop from hell. He eventually turned it over to authorities and members of the press. The lawsuit claims that Isaac illicitly distributed Hunter Biden's personal data and accuses him of 6 counts of invasion of privacy. It was filed in U.S. District Court in Delaware first thing Friday, like, bam, like, we get up, like, skip breakfast, and we're just going to do this. The first son alleged that Isaac had no legal right to copy and disseminate the contents of the laptop that was abandoned at his Delaware store in 2019. 42 pages is how big this filing is. Can you believe that? It was lodged in response, of course, to the long-running defamation suit that's filed by MacIsaac himself against Hunter and others. But this suit also accuses the repair shop owner of helping to distribute the laptop's contents for political gain just weeks before the 2020 election. Talk about projection, and I didn't mean to rhyme there. But that's interesting. Of course, What did this little 42 pages say? Well, I'm not going to read 42 pages, but I'll pick out a couple lines here. But it says, quote, no matter how they came into his initial position, MacIsaac improperly accessed files that he admits were none of his business, even though he was never given permission by Mr. Biden to access or review any data of Mr. Biden's. That's what it says. Then it says also that he later made copies of the data and distributed the copies to others, including former President Trump's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani. Quote, MacIsaac's knowing and intentional distribution of Mr. Biden's personal and sensitive data was not carried out for any reasonable or legitimate purposes, but rather to try and expose Mr. Biden's data to those that he knew or should have known would intend to create embarrassment and harm for Mr. Biden, the countersuit says. Furthermore, in addition, MacIsaac decided to use the data in his position for, or in his possession, I'm sorry, for commercial purposes and to make money, which he has done by including portions of the data in his book and making reference to and or making some or all of the data available at appearances he has made, end quote. Well, that's legalese for BS.
Yeah, well, he's kind of put it in the ringer here, because they're still saying, well, it may or may not be ours, because he can't outright say, yes, of course it's mine, even though everybody knows it is, because there's so much damaging stuff on this. I think it's hysterical that he's trying to sue John Paul MacIsaac here, because he signed a release that basically said, look, if you leave your stuff here, I don't know exactly how many days, maybe 90 days or something like that, and you don't, then it reverts to us. Now we own it. And he signed that. And I know that MacIsaac had him sign that, because I've seen him point that out on the form that he has. So I just think the whole thing is ridiculous. I don't know that he's going to get, I don't know how Hunter's going to win this if he can't come right out and say it's all mine, everything in it is mine. They're trying to have it both ways a little bit here, it seems like. Very strange. The laptop is just so corrupt. Forget all the drugs and the hookers and whatnot. Just the foreign business deals. That's the story. And that's what they're petrified of. You know it. You know they are, Ruckus. Scared to death of it.
Yeah, well, that's why it gets really weird. There's some language in this countersuit that is like, I think, addresses or speaks to this, or I don't know. This is very interesting, I suppose, in light of what you just said. But apparently it says in there, and I'm quoting, this is not an admission by Mr. Biden that MacIsaac or others in fact possessed any particular laptop containing electronically stored data belonging to Mr. Biden. Rather, Mr. Biden simply acknowledges that at some point, Mac Isaac obtained electronically stored data, some of which belonged to Mr. Biden, end quote.
Yeah, so, good luck.
What the heck is that other than a cover your ass thing, right? You know,
that is exactly what it is. CYA all the way. And it's not going to stand because it's already public record. Everybody knows it. Here's the thing. I don't know if you watched Ruckus when they talked to this. Well, he's been on the news quite a few times now. But when he first broke with this, when this story first broke, and they, of course, immediately tried to bury it. Twitter, of course, buried it. They blackballed the New York Post that ran the story on it. But he came right out, John Paul Mac Isaac, and basically said, I told the FBI, came, they made a forensic copy of the laptop, but they left the laptop with him. So how is that his fault? If he contacted the FBI first, which he did, Hunter, it sounds like he ought to be suing the FBI. I don't know.
Well, there's
very, very screwy. I can't wait to see how this story shakes out because, I just think that this is going to be a huge, and it should have been in 2020, but I think in 24, it's going to be a huge election issue here. And the question is, what's the media going to do with this story? You know what they're going to do. They're going to try and bury it. But I just think I think we're too far in now. Anyway.
Well, and I think it's, you know, everyone's obsessed on the laptop, but I mean, let's not let poor Mac Isaac get lost in this. He's just a dude just doing his job, and this just literally fell in his lap, and he didn't ask for any of this, and his life is ruined because of it. So I really feel for this guy, not going to lie. The other thing is,
he had to shut his store up.
Right. Yeah. No. Yeah. It's terrible. I mean, and I think he's written a book. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. He wrote a book about it, but that's what I was going to bring up is about that book. They also want to throw this accusation of him disseminating this private information inside this book. As you pointed out, this is now public information. You know what I mean? And then for them to admit any of that, let's not forget, not that long ago, all of this wasn't real. It's totally fake. It doesn't exist, Steve. It's all in your imagination, you crazy, kooky conspiracy theorist. This is Russian disinformation.
Yeah, it's Russian disinformation, and we're suing him, but we're not admitting it's real. It's clown invasion world of privacy, but we're not really saying that it was his privacy. It's the screwiest lawsuit ever, and I think that the media will cover it as if it's, oh, this is serious business. What John Paul Mac Isaac did was absolutely over the line. That's the way the media is going to cover this story, unless, of course, it was Don Jr.'s laptop. Then we know how it would be covered. But alas, they've got nothing like that on Don Jr. Don Jr. apparently, and Eric and all of the other Trump kids, apparently they don't do a whole lot of cocaine and smoke meth and crack and stuff, and they don't get hookers over and do parties at their place all the time, which is strange. I thought all the kids did that these days.
Well, if they do, Steve, we don't know because they haven't accidentally left their laptop somewhere.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a very good point. But gosh almighty. And, you know, the funny thing is him leaving that laptop there is actually it fits perfectly, doesn't it? That is something that somebody that is their life is a complete mess. I have sympathy for addicts and stuff, but Hunter Biden is just a he's just a horrible guy. I mean, this is just a guy that is probably a lot of that is his old man's fault. I mean, some of that stuff on there, that the emails to family members, at least I don't take half your money like Pops does, and all of that stuff. It's just what a screwy, screwy family the Biden family is. They really are just such a screwy family. But anyway, all right, well, Ruckus, we'll see how it shakes out, and hopefully there'll be a good defense team for John Paul Mac Isaac. Maybe this case will get thrown out before it really gets rolling. Although, you know, he's got a very high-end lawyer, so we shall see, I guess. But thanks for the story, brother.
You betcha. Have a nice weekend. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
You too. You too as well, Ruckus. Thank you very much. All right. There goes Adam. We're going to take a break. We come back. I've got a great guest for you today. Murray Sabrin will be joining us. Now, Murray is a professor emeritus at Ramapo College in the state of New Jersey. That's my wife's alma mater. And today seems to be as good a day as any to have an economics professor on because the market is just looking horrible. I think this weekend couldn't have gotten here any quicker than it did, because at least now the markets will be closed down, and so it'll staunch the bleeding at least for a couple of days. But we'll talk to Murray Sabrin on the other side. You're listening to The Steve Hook Show on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan.
Akin Dev, filmmaker, doing the very hard job of looking into criminal networks of child exploitation online.
But if we're creating platforms that we know that children are going to be on, we have to ensure that we give them the same type of safety that we would in the real world. In the documentary, we use an analogy that if you're building a playground in the real world, you've got to go through a bunch of council regulations to make it safe. But if you're building a social media platform, you don't have to do any of that. The thing that I find really disturbing, though, is that, like, I've seen children that are no doubt under the age of 14, 15, performing, you know, some very kind of suggestive activity, and they have over 100,000 people on their live stream giving them money in the form of TikTok dollars. What society doesn't realize is that TikTok keeps half of that money. So I'm not going to call it out and say that it's a conspiracy that TikTok allows this content to prosper on their platform, but they certainly aren't doing anything to alleviate it.
McBride and Brennan with David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan on today's News Talk Radio, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. CO2 sustains all life on Earth, but now it's in long-term decline. We face the return of an ice age. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, welcome back to the Steve Hook Show on TNT, and I'm very happy to welcome to the program Murray Sabrin. Murray is an economics professor at Ramapo. He's also Ramapo College in the state of New Jersey. He's also an author. He's run for office a few times, and we welcome him to the program. Hello, Mr. Sabrin. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Steve. Great to be with you.
Yeah, my wife is a graduate of Ramapo. I don't know if you heard that, but you work at her alma mater.
What year?
It was she'd kill me if I said it on the air, but it was quite a few years ago, '90s, early '90s, I think she graduated.
Well, I was there in the early 90s, so we may have crossed.
Well, she may have. She's on vacation with her family in Florida this week. So when she gets back, I'll ask her about it. But I'm glad to have you.
Well, now Florida, I retired here 2 years ago.
Oh, really? There you go. Good. Well, a lot of people seem to be doing that these days, don't they?
Yes, it's a lot of people. It's a good epidemic.
Yeah, it's the free state of Florida. Okay. Well, the markets closed today down. No shocker there. Dow closed down, 384 points thereabouts. NASDAQ lost about 86 points on the day. And S&P 500 is 43 points down, which is huge for S&P. All of them took about a one percentage point deduction today. This is getting very scary here, Professor. At first, you know, we were told, oh, it's just Silicon Valley Bank, and oh, yeah, Signature Bank, too. So these woke banks. And but now it's starting to, Credit Suisse is starting to come under the heat. And I was reading earlier, they said that we could be looking at a Bear Stern moment here with the banking industry. And that scares the living hell out of me. Thank God we're in the weekend. But what's your take on the whole kerfuffle that we got going on?
Well, Steve, this is the consequences of the Federal Reserve's incredibly loose monetary policy since the financial crisis of 2007-2008. The banks were hemorrhaging at that point because they were making these very bad loans to unqualified housing buyers, the so-called don't ask, don't tell loans. People who had a pulse were getting a loan without any financial strength. And so that caused the bubble to get really out of hand. And then when it went under, the Federal Reserve stepped in and bailed out the banks and created trillions of dollars. And now when the COVID lockdown occurred, same thing happened. The Federal Reserve literally in overnight created, I think, $4 trillion. And in 2 years, the Federal Reserve created $7 trillion. The money supply went from $15 trillion to $22 trillion. That money has to go someplace. It went to the mortgage market. It went to the banking system. It went to Wall Street. It went to people at auctions for collectibles. Mickey Mantle's baseball cards sold for an incredible amount of money, if you heard that recently. In fact, yeah. It was sold by the gentleman from New Jersey who bought it for $50,000. I think it sold for well over $1 million or maybe even more than that. So the money flooded the system. So what happened in Silicon Valley, as you know, startups were getting a huge amount of venture capital. The startups put the money in Silicon Valley Bank. The bank bought long-term government bonds because they're the most secure asset in the world at very low interest rates, roughly 2%. And as the Fed started tightening monetary policy last year because inflation was roaring compared to previous decades, those bonds declined in value because as interest rates go up, bond values go down. A simple financial—
That's Econ 101.
Right. My students know that. My sophomore and junior students who took finance with me know that, and with my colleagues. So the bank's equity was basically wiped out because the losses on paper on the bonds wiped out the value of the equity. And so the stock of Silicon Valley Bank went to zero. And so what you have is an example of bad risk management at the bank, plus massive monetary printing by the Fed. And it all comes together in the perfect storm. And we don't know how many more banks, regional banks, have that same problem where they bought these long government bonds and those bonds are now have declined in value 10, 15, 20%. So that's the real problem we have. We have an unstable financial system because the Federal Reserve pumps money in, pumps money out, and they cause the business cycle, as I've written about for the last 40 years. And this is nothing new to me. The question is, we don't know exactly where it's going to show up. These hemorrhaging of in the financial institutions. But the more important point, Steve, and this is something that is discussed but never mentioned clearly by the talking heads on CNBC and other financial news shows, banks are inherently frail economic institutions, financial institutions, because they take money in as deposits, savings accounts, and checking accounts, and then they make long-term loans, 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, whatever the case may be. So there's a basic mismatch between the assets, which are the loans, and the liabilities, which are due on demand. I have a simple solution because it's based upon sound finance. All demand deposits, checking accounts, should be backed by 100% reserves. Those could be either cash or they can be treasury bills, short-term treasury bills, the most liquid asset in the world. Therefore, you wouldn't need FDIC because the checking account holders would be fully protected by the faith and credit of the United States, plus the cash that the bank would have in their vaults or a deposit at the Federal Reserve. If the bank wants to make a one-year loan, it should have deposits of one-year CDs. This way, you really match up the time structure of loans with the time structure of deposits, and you solve the problem and you can get rid of the FDIC. Then the question becomes, who takes the risk if some of these loans go belly up? Well, it's either the CD holders or the shareholders of the bank. And that has to be done through a contractual relationship between the bank, the shareholders, and the CD holders. That solves the problem literally overnight. The reason the bankers don't like this, because banks work on leverage today and they earn oodles of money when the economy is roaring ahead like we had during the housing boom and in the most recent boom, the high-tech boom. They make oodles of money because they're lending out money left and right, and they're getting pretty good interest. But the Fed is manipulating everything, so we don't have a free market interest rate, which we desperately need, so savers and borrowers can know exactly what the price is of money.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this. We're talking to Professor, well, former professor, Murray Sabrin, economist. Murray, let me ask you this. I had read an article, and I got to admit, when it comes to the banking stuff and all the regulations, I, like most people, am kind of a neophyte at it. I get the, I can see the broad strokes. I know what's going on. But I read an article where Morgan Stanley was warning SVB, was warning them almost a year ago, saying, hey, look, you're backed by security and treasury bonds, and the Fed's going to keep bumping these rates up. You're losing money hand over fist. You better cover your ass. And it looks like nobody at SVB took that advice. And then there was a run. Everybody, you know, got wind of the fact that, God, our money's going to be just disappearing. They ran the bank and wham, bam, here we are. Now, is that the same thing that happened to Signature Bank?
I'm pretty sure that's the same thing that happened. I haven't done a deep dive into Signature. I've done a pretty deep dive in SVB. And this is an example of incompetent people who are managing the bank, whether it's the board of directors, the president, the CEO, and the other executives. They should know better that when interest rates are rising, your portfolio is going to get a hit. So you should either hedge the portfolio. So if rates do go up, you're going to make money on betting that the rates will go up and your assets will go down in value. So again, all they care about today is, you know, diversity, inclusion, equity,
and woke crap.
Nothing that has to do with sound banking principles. And this is what's frustrating to me as a finance professor who's taught students about responsible financial management. It's gone out the window across corporate America. And probably, I don't know how much of this is in Europe and Australia, but certainly in America, we've gone crazy here in terms of not looking at the fundamentals. And when you go away from fundamentals in any sector of the economy, whether it's medicine, education, banking, food, you cause all sorts of problems. And we're seeing this because banking is probably the most visible, with energy, I guess, sectors of the economy, where people can see exactly what the problems are, but they don't know what the solutions are. And so I've been going all over talk radio and television around the country the last week or so, saying this: a problem is simple. And the reason it's not being done is because the bankers are making tons of money, and the regulators and people like Elizabeth Warren think that banking is too risky to be left to the free market, which is one of the great myths in our society.
Well, listen, we've got to take a break, but I want to come back, and you kind of touched on what your solution is. But I want to touch on when we get back, we'll talk about the hesitancy of the banks to pull the trigger on making a move like that. It seems to me that they kind of want the imprimatur of the FDIC backing them. But it seems that especially when you have a crap, the governance board of SVB, they really had their head in the sand and other places because they didn't follow sound economic advice. But maybe that's why they like the FDIC, because they're like, oh, if we screw up, we'll get bailed out. And so they have. Let's come back and discuss that. My guest today is Murray Sabrin. You're listening to The Steve Hook Show. We'll be right back on TNT Radio.
Really big, 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 the biggest breaking news story. Big, gigantic, big, enormous.
TNT Radio News.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Ukrainian soldiers fighting in Bakhmut fear they are being sent to their deaths amid a relentless push by Russian forces to capture a city. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un says his country has no choice but to show its strength in order to deter war, following its latest long-range missile test, which he claimed was a response to the ongoing reckless U.S.-led war games in the region.
For a complete list of shows and our schedule offered on TNT Radio,
simply visit our website at tntradio.live. We serve up the latest live news and current affairs presented by a host of credible and expert commentators who can separate fact from fiction, truth from propaganda, keeping you in the loop on TNT Radio.
All right, welcome back to the Steve Hook Show on TNT Radio. My guest is Murray Sabrin, economics professor, finance wizard. Thank you for holding on there, Murray. Okay, as we were talking before we went to break, you say you've got the solution, and the solution, as you spelled it out, does seem pretty simple, and it seems like it makes perfect sense. The question is, it seems like banks are hesitant. God knows, I know Democrats are hesitant to get rid of any government entity at all. Mm-hmm. They think there should be more and more and more and more. But doesn't the FDIC kind of give a stamp, an imprimatur of this is a safe place to do your banking? We've got them. But the FDIC, the feds dropped the ball on this bank as well. We can blame the bank management because that was crap, obvious, woke and all of that crap was what they were about. But don't the feds have some responsibility here as well for the FDIC, for not the regulators, for not getting in there and looking at this?
Well, it's about supervision. That's what supposedly the Federal Reserve and the FDIC is supposed to do, is supervise the banks. The regulation is a false facade. It's a charade. Let me give you some historical perspective, Steve. I think that they'll put this all in context. Throughout American history, we've had bank panics because bankers didn't have the gold that people deposited to withdraw on demand. And so they made these extra loans. And when people got wind of it, they would come and they would try to get their gold out and they would rupture the bank, hence the term bankrupt. And so we've had these panics all along the 19th century. And then the big one occurred in 1907. And what did that lead to? The Federal Reserve in 1913, when the progressives said to the bankers, hey, this is a great way of getting all you guys under one umbrella called the Federal Reserve System that would give the Federal Reserve the power to be the lender of last resort. So if you get into trouble, don't worry about it. We're going to come to your rescue. And exactly, of course, and so it looked like everything was going well in the 1920s. And then what happened? The Federal Reserve created huge amounts of money in the 1920s. We've got a stock market boom, a real estate boom. And we know what happened in October 1929. The stock market crashed. People started taking their money out of the bank again. And so we're on the verge of getting rid of the fractional reserve banking system, which was the plague of bankers for hundreds of years. However, Roosevelt gets elected in 32, and what does he install? FDIC at $2,500 per deposit. So that gives the bankers more breathing room to continue to make fractional reserve banking a possibility. So the government always comes to the rescue of the bankers, because bankers have been part of the crony capitalist system literally from day one of the Republic in 1788. So here we are with financial crises since then. The S&L crisis in 1990, the other crises that we've had, of course, the housing bubble crisis, and now this one. So this is nothing new that in American history. It's been going on for more than 200 years. And the people like myself who've been writing about this and warning that fractional reserve banking is inherently unstable, the bankers don't care because they're getting a free ride. This is the moral hazard of banking that economists sometimes write about, but it's a moral hazard. If you know you're going to get bailed out, what do? Engage in risky activity. I live in Southwest Florida, Steve. You know what happened at the end of September? We had a massive hurricane that wiped out good portions of Fort Myers Beach, Sanibel, Captiva, and private insurers wouldn't insure because it's too risky. So the government comes in with FEMA and the state government, and they try to make people whole. But if people weren't living there in the first place, you wouldn't have that problem. So when the government encourages risky behavior, what will you get? Risky behavior. And that's exactly what happened in the banking system.
Well, let me ask you this, Murray, because this is something that I've read about, the 2008 housing boom, the bust. And everybody was bitching about the banks because they were making these outrageous loans to people, as you mentioned earlier. I could never have paid them off, should have never even been eligible for the loans. But they were basically pressured to make these loans by the government, basically saying, we're no longer redlining Community Reinvestment Act and all that. And of course, we know Clinton doubled down on that. And then you get Fannie and Freddie in the mix, where they're basically saying, don't worry, we've got you covered. And one thing leads to another. And now all of a sudden you got low mortgage, very risky loans going out there. That cratered when the bubble burst. Of course, Bush got all the blame for that. And I'm not a big Bush fan, but I know it wasn't his fault. This was building for a long time. If a bank is going to be coerced by the government to make these horrible loans, and they know it's a risk, And they say, well, by God, if we're going to jump in, we're going to jump in with both feet and we're going to make as much money as we can before the whole damn thing comes crashing down. And that's exactly what they did, right?
Absolutely. I mean, most of the loans were packaged as mortgage-backed securities and sold to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Again, so here's another example of government getting involved in the housing market, another sector it shouldn't be involved in. So you got housing, energy, banking, agriculture, education. I mean, everything the government gets involved in, there are distortions. And distortions mean that it's not economic activity that is based upon free market principles. And we know in the free market, there are going to be mistakes. They're going to be bankruptcies, but it's not going to be systemic. That's the whole point that Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and the rest of the crowd do not understand. In a free market economy, you cannot have systemic problems like you have today because everything is interconnected with the banking system. If one bank fails in Florida, it's not going to affect banks around the country, or one bank failing in Silicon Valley will not affect a bank in New Jersey or New York. This is why a bank has to have a diversified portfolio of loans. It should be geographically spread out. And this way you reduce the risk of any one default causing a bank failure. And that's good financial management in a bank. And that's why the big banks are in pretty good shape, because they have diversified portfolios that are geographically dispersed in various industries. And so if one bank goes under and you got a $100 billion bank, it's not going to be a problem. If a loan goes belly up, that's $1 million or even $50 million. It's not going to affect the bank's earnings that much.
Yeah, but SVB specifically was kind of a niche bank, and it was making loans to all of these startups in Silicon Valley. And I guess, you know, the woke bubble dwellers that live out there all said, oh, SVB, they're great. And yet they weren't great. And thankfully, it was just that one bank. It's not like there's SVBs everywhere. I mean, I don't know how big, I don't know how many branches they have. But I know that that it's not like a Bank of America or a TD Bank or one of the biggies. So are you saying, Professor Sabrin, you don't believe that we're going to see a complete crash of the system? You don't foresee that?
No, I don't foresee that. That doesn't mean it couldn't happen. I mean, I just don't foresee it, because the large banks are pretty much diversified. They're pretty well capitalized. And even if it does happen, we know the Federal Reserve is ready to step in and buy up these assets like they did in 2007, 2008, and 2020, 2021 and 22. They flooded the economy with money. They bought trillions of dollars of assets. So if something happens over the next several months, you can be sure the Federal Reserve is going to step in. What will that do? It will keep inflation relatively high, because you'll flood the economy with more money, but they'll be creating more uncertainty in the business community, because they don't know where the next shoe is going to drop. And businesses don't like uncertainty, and they don't like volatility. And so therefore they may hold back on investment, which will hurt employment. It'll hurt consumption to a certain degree. So again, those of us that have been preaching about free markets, it's been going on deaf ears in Washington and around the country. But I think we have not only the intellectual high ground, I think we have the moral high ground, saying you guys can't regulate anything. You can't supervise these things. And there's another point that be made here that I neglected to mention. There were Roku put $200 million of deposits of the company's money in the bank, and it was only insured up to $250,000. That is so outrageous. If you're a company with that type of cash, you buy treasury bills like Warren Buffett does for Berkshire Hathaway, or Apple does, or Microsoft. When they have cash, they don't keep it in a bank. They buy treasury bills, because that's the safest asset you could buy.
And yet all of these people are going to be made whole Biden has announced that he's going to come he's riding into the rescue, although he assures taxpayers that you will not be taxed one penny for this. Of course, that is complete and utter BS that the media allows him to get away with, because he's going to go after the banks for their fees. They're just going to, aren't they just going to raise their fees? And then wham, bam, here we are again. We are paying for it, aren't we?
Well, sure. I think the numbers I saw is that the FDIC has like $130 billion in in reserves, and there are $15 to $20 trillion in bank deposits out there. So if more shoes are going to drop over the next few months, the certain FDIC doesn't have the money. They will either borrow from the Federal Reserve, or the Federal Reserve will, I don't know what they'll do in terms of providing a line of credit for the FDIC. The whole thing is a mess. And effectively what's happened, Steve, is effectively nationalized the banking system. Even though we have private corporations like Chase and Wells Fargo and Bank of America, it's effectively nationalized. And this is, again, the crony capitalism that I taught my students when I taught financial history in the United States for the last 10 years before I retired, that this is how our system evolved, because the banks have a flawed business model. It's called borrowing short and lend long. Every economist knows this, and they think it's proper and necessary for the banks to operate that way. And that is one of the great myths I am trying to dispel in doing radio and TV shows across America and internationally as well.
So obviously, the banks that have got the large diversified portfolios are the ones that are going to be okay. It sounds to me like this is the way that people should look at their personal finances too. Diversify. You hear it all the time. Absolutely. This is an example of that. Yeah. Because I tell you what, Professor Sabrin, I won't even look at my Fidelity account right now. for the last couple of months, I'm like, I don't even want to look at it because I see what's happening. What is also very annoying, and I know this is not so much about the banking, although it kind of is, here we have the administration bailing out SVB. And I assume they're going to do the same for Signature. And I think it's funny that Barney Frank is on the board of that bank.
You can't have more irony in America than that.
I know. I'm just like, oh, okay. Barney's on the board. There we go. But so a little town like East Palestine, Ohio is going to be forgotten about. Yep. If this was a bank in Texas called, instead of Silicon Valley Bank, let's call it a Big Oil Bank.
Yeah.
Do you think Biden would be rushing to bail out Big Oil Bank? Hell no.
No, because Silicon Valley provides a lot of money to the Democratic Party. That's the reality of the crony capitalist system that has been created in America. And we have to get rid of it. I mean, it is poison to the economics and the finance and the politics of America.
Yeah, no kidding. And the crony capitalism, and all of it that, and it's not just in the banking industry, as you so rightly point out, it's across huge sectors of the economy. We have this, the weaponization of, you know, federal agencies going against people they don't like. It's just all so dirty. I think that if the American people knew just how filthy it was, they'd be sickened by it.
Well, the thing that the politicians are relying on, that people will be complacent and they won't grab their pitchforks and go to Washington and demand change. We know that countries that have had tremendous corruption, when people get riled up enough, they go and they can change administrations and change.
Saw it happen in the Netherlands.
Absolutely. I mean, this is the beauty of you don't have to have 100% people riled up. You need a small vocal minority, just as we saw with BLM 2 years ago, having their demonstrations throughout America. It wasn't a lot of people, but it was enough people to get the publicity on the nightly news. And then, of course, corporations were scared as hell, and they donated tons of money to BLM. And for what purpose? I mean, the people who ran BLM are crony racialists, to put it that way, rather than crony capitalists.
They're crony racialist / Marxist. I mean, and I think it's funny that these champagne Marxists, what did they do? They went out and bought mansions.
I mean,
with all that money, they went out and bought mansions in real estate and invested. That's just unbelievable.
I mean, CEOs should be ashamed of themselves of how they reacted to BLM.
They totally just capitulated, and they allowed themselves to be extorted. Also, they could wrap that false flag of virtue around themselves. I was disgusted by the whole thing. Well, let me ask you this on a political angle here. Do you think that what is your take on what's going to happen here in the coming 24? Do you think that people are finally waking up to not just the banking crap, but all of it? And are we going to have a cleaning house like they did in the Netherlands? Do you foresee that happening in the States?
I really hope so. I mean, more information has been coming out about Fauci and Wuhan. Masks don't work. There've been that the vaccine is not safe and effective, that it's been a false narrative. It was not science, it was fear. And this, and I wrote about this in my Substack column, which I hope everyone goes to, murraysaban.substack.com. COVID was a trial run for the next pandemic because there was so much compliance by the business community, by local governments, by state governments, by everybody who was scared to death that if people were going to go back to work, the schools, that that people would get COVID and die. I mean, this is the fear that was instilled in people. And I spoke to somebody, who did I speak to the other day? Oh yeah, a woman from an organization here in South Jersey, which is South Florida. And she said she got COVID. And I said, what treatment did you get? She said, none. I just stayed home and took care of myself. And that was that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And that's just it. And this is another example of how the government manipulates. And the thing that's so frustrating about this, Professor Saban, is that the media will always carry the water of the left on this kind of crap, whether it's COVID, whether it's the mask, whether it's Fauci, whether it's Biden bailing out SVB, but leaving East Palestine, Ohio residents to just twist in the wind. The media cover it all up. And now we've got the Hunter laptop. It's just an absolute mess. Every time I wake up, I feel like I'm in the Twilight Zone or something, watching what's going on now.
Yeah, I haven't watched national news for a year now, because when I was watching it a year ago, it was so blatantly propaganda rather than news. And I grew up in New York City in the 1950s and 60s, where the news programs on TV were news. It wasn't opinion. It wasn't propaganda. It was who, what, when, and where. And you learned a lot by watching the nightly news. And then when New York City had the major paper strike in 1962, that's when local news expanded, because there were no newspapers for I think several weeks or a couple of months. And the news expanded, and then eventually CNN came in. And I was an avid watcher of CNN and MSNBC because they provided news. I haven't watched those cable networks in ages, because it's not news, it's total propaganda. So I go on the internet, I go to the websites that I know will be reliable, and I speak to people, I write to people, and I find out what's going on in the world, because certainly the mainstream media are not doing it. And I know a little bit about the mainstream media since I ran for office in New Jersey, and I saw how they treated my candidacy.
Yeah, they're corrupt to the core. And the problem is, a lot of them, it's not like, you know, back in the halcyon days of the free press here in the States. You know, ABC was American Broadcast Company. That was their business. But now their business is, oh, we also sell soap in Indonesia. Oh, we're also tied in. You know, in other words, it's a big corporation game now. And these people, you know, like CNN, I think, who owns CNN? CNN is owned by Comcast, I think, or is that MSNBC? One of them.
That's MSNBC,
is owned by
Comcast.
Yeah, I think CNN is owned by AT&T or something. But
yes.
But the point is when you've got big mega corporations that own these news agencies, these be they broadcast news or cable, they've just bought themselves a propaganda wing to cover their own ass on everything else, and that's why I guess that's what's happening.
Again, the corporatization of everything, especially medicine, that's the thing that's really troubling, is that you no longer have many sole practitioners anymore. And that's what makes doctors compliant with the CDC guidelines, because the hospital that owns them says you got to do this. I mean, there are still, I haven't seen it too much down here in Florida, but up north, I would imagine the doctors are still wearing masks, and other people are still wearing masks in the waiting room. And this is just an example of a sheep-like mentality, where you just do what people are saying, even though there's no evidence that this was a good practice.
Well, and you know what? I'll tell you something. And that, God, we could go on this for about 2 hours just on this subject alone because it's so frustrating to me. But what we see happening in schools now is we knew that the lockdowns were going to hurt students. Everybody said it. We said it right out of the gate. This is harmful to the children more than anybody. Now we see school districts saying, well, guess what? The lockdowns were horrible for the kids. All of the kids are lagging in math. All of the kids are all the STEM subjects were way behind on. So what are they doing to address it? They're dumbing down their requirements. They're saying, okay, well, we're not going to pick everybody up. We're just going to lower the standards. That's doesn't seem to be the way to do it.
This is shameful. This is why I'm calling for the separation of education and the government, because education, if war is too important to be left to generals, education and medicine are too important to be left to politicians and bureaucrats. It's that simple. Parents should be in charge of their kids' health and education. And schools have now become, again, propaganda mills instead of educational institutions like I grew up with in New York City, where teachers taught. And if you learned, if you went to school prepared to learn, you were going to learn. And I learned, and I was fortunate enough to get into the Bronx High School of Science when I was a youngster. And that was one of the great educations of my life, because the teachers were like college professors. They were really well-versed in their subjects, and you got a first-rate education.
And you know what, Murray? I'd wager you didn't know who your teacher slept with and didn't much give a damn, did you? But even that's being... Even that's being pushed on the kids. And it seems to me that there's a nefarious reason behind it. It's not just so, oh, the teachers' unions are happy, although I'm sure that has a lot to do with it. But it's because if you dumb down the public, you can get away with a lot more. They've really succeeded at dumbing down a lot of people, I think.
What's really sad is that sometimes you see these person on the street interviews, and they ask them simple questions about America, and they have no idea who the vice president is. They have no idea what's going on. They have no idea of history. And I was a history major, geography minor, and at one time I could take a blank map and fill in every country in the world, because I studied every region of the world. And I could tell you what the economies were like. And I could tell you more about that country than you would get from major news sources. So being a curious person about the world, you really want to know how people live. That's why anthropology is such an important subject, because you really get to understand the culture and the values of different societies and how they evolved. But kids don't care about that. All they care about is Instagram and TikTok.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, the good news is there are millions and millions of students out there that are doing wonderfully. The bad news is they happen to live in China.
Well, the other good news, and this is really what I've been saying for a long time, especially when the research I did over the past few years, despite all the things that government throws at the business community, men and women entrepreneurs are still doing what they love best, which is create, innovate, and invent. That's what I found in my research. So that's why you've got to be long-term optimistic about the U.S. economy, like Warren Buffett always writes in his shareholder letters to Berkshire Hathaway owners. And that's been true. Look at the last 200 years of America. With all the wars and inflation and spying and all the other denial of civil liberties, the economy has grown by leaps and bounds because of all the inventions that take place. We are now communicating in a way that would cost us a fortune years ago if we could even do it. And today, you can have an international audience at virtually no cost. That is astonishing when you think about that.
Yeah, no kidding. And I tell you, being in this industry for as long as I have been in this industry, it's one of those canary in the coal mine industries. We see the technology much quicker than most people see it. You know, I mean, I remember when I first got into radio, we started playing CDs. We were bragging about it. Like, look at this newfangled technology. And that seems like the old fogey days. And it wasn't even that long ago. As fast as it goes.
Same thing with VCRs. I mean, who has a VCR today? No one has a VCR today.
That's right. You can probably buy them on Etsy for a lot of money. They probably sell at a premium. That's kind of just the way technology goes. And it is strange that as it gets more advanced, it seems to get quicker. You know, the technological advancements seem to happen rapid fire. At least that's been my experience on in radio. So it sounds to me like you're a long-term optimist about the economy of the country. Maybe not so much about the politics of the country, but what do you? I think that just to, because we only got a minute or two here left. What do you think is going to happen in 24? You think Biden's going to run again? And what do you like on the Republican side? Just give us your opinion.
I've made this point several times. I don't think Biden's going to run again because given his age and his cognitive ability, anything can happen over the next 6 months or a year. All he needs is one fall and get a concussion or whatever. And he's not a healthy guy, let's face it. Even though they say he is, at his age, we know what the mortality tables say about someone his age who's had an aneurysm. So he's not in great shape.
True.
And I think Hillary Clinton is chopping at the bit to run again. I really do.
Oh,
I think she wants to. I think she wants to get into the race so badly because she's probably saying to herself, if Joe Biden could win, I should win.
Yeah. Well, listen, there's my music, so I got to roll. But thank you. That's a great way to end the show with a laugh. And hopefully that doesn't come true. Murray Sabrin, God bless. Thank you, brother. I hope to have you back on the show sometime soon. Have a wonderful St. Patrick's Day. This is the Steve Hook Show. We'll see you again next week on TNT Radio. Goodbye.